Instead of making a decision of do you or do you not go to college, the decision should be, let's talk about what you want to do when you graduate high school. And if you have that conversation, your child may very well convince you that he has a plan or she has a plan that to go forward with, that they've actually really thought about this.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe. Welcome back to another episode. Excited to have with us Neil Rosen today. Neil, good to have you here.
Thanks. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be an easy conversation today because, first of all, you're very involved and passionate about kids' education, which we are. As you shared before, you're an entrepreneur, not only in creating companies, but owning real estate like us. And obviously, one of the biggest things that I saw too is you have a concern about screen time and off-screen time balance for today's families, which is something we're big on. So I just want to jump right in and kind of talk about how did Professor Stork come about?
Professor Stork came about many years ago when I was a teacher. I was a tennis player and I had the nickname Mad Stork because I was tall and skinny and big net game and loved to play tennis. And in class one day, the kids were teasing me about it. And one of the kids said, well, when you're here, you're Professor Stork.
That's
where it came from. And it stuck. And I write all my children's books under the name Professor Stork. Wow. I also have a book on parenting and education coming out this summer called Rediscovering the Village. And that book is written under Neil Rosen.
Yeah. That's fun. Tell me more about your children's books as Professor Stork. What types of things does Professor Stork teach about?
Well, I'm pretty big on reading and making sure that books have a message. I believe what I keep telling parents is that books are not babysitters. You have enough babysitters. So the key to a good book is not one that's fun or interesting, which is all important and needs to be there. But really, most importantly, books should open conversations. Oh, and parents need to be much more involved in their children's reading. So some of the books I have, one series is called Penelope and Jack, and it was about a boy and a girl who became friends during COVID, living in a city in high rises, and they lived on balconies on opposite sides of the street. And they became friends during that period when they were all isolated at home. Mm. And then the second book in the series is about called The Girl on Misfit Hill. And it's about Penelope and Jack actually getting banned from their classroom. Their teacher was not very open to different types of children and different types of people. So one after one, the kids went up to the top of Misfit Hill, where mm-hmm. they learned to really appreciate each other's differences. And eventually, the teacher joined them, and that turned around. The third one is Crisis on the Beach, which is about when their dog gets caught in some plastic in the ocean. So the books all have conversation starters, whether it be about pollution, whether it be about equality, whether it be about children understanding other children or getting to know people who don't look like them, things like that. And to me, that's what's most important. Yes, they've got to be beautiful and well-written and well-illustrated, but they have to start a story. And my biggest thing with parents is that I think parents need to know that reading with children, or shouldn't know, reading with children goes on all the way through the teenage years. Mm-hmm. And not enough parents do that. They read to kids when they're very young, then they read with them when they're just starting to learn, and then it goes away. That's when books become babysitters. If you have a 13, 14, 15-year-old kid, once a month or once every other month, you should read a book that they read. Mm. Don't have to read it with them. Don't have to read it to them. Just read a book they're reading. Yeah. And you'll be amazed at the conversations that opens with kids when you're riding in the car or doing something else or playing ball. You have a common ground to talk about. You understand the kinds of things they read and like to read. It's a big deal.
Yeah. For a period of time, we would choose a book a quarter to read with the boys. Our older boy, we have five children, two young adults, and then the rest are younger. And we used to do every Tuesday night, we would have like a book club and we'd go to dinner. They could choose where we would go. And then we would talk about what we read that week. And their friends were always invited. So if any other teens wanted to join us, we'd buy them a book. We'd buy them dinner. We'd talk about the stuff and it would cover anything and everything. And then as we continued, as you're saying, they would read a book and say, Mom, Hunger Games is so much better in the book than the movie. You got to read it. And then I'd read it. And so we really have that environment. And even now we share an Audible account And it's funny because our younger children like some of the same books that the older children like, because they'll return to the novels that we read when they were younger. And I found that it's such a secure space for them that we did. It's funny because I would have never thought about it the way you said it, like, oh, we'll keep reading with your children when they're older. But that is what we've done. And you and I even do that relationally. We read to each other.
I mean, when you talk to parents a lot, so what percentage of parents would you say almost have no conversations with their kids at all after they become teenagers?
Right.
And the conversation, having a book to talk about, it opens the door to other conversations. So many other things will come up in that conversation that are really important to know. If parents with young children go to my website for young children up to like ages 12, I have a family book club on the website. It's free. Parents can join. And once a month, I send them books, suggested books for the kids based on age group, and also questions as conversation starters to talk to their kids about to get it going. So the family book club, which you do intuitively, is a wonderful idea. How many friends do you have that also do that? Probably not many.
Not many. But it's neat because it opens up conversations about characters. And I say characters, it could be even if it's a nonfiction book, but it opens up storylines and opportunities of like, wow, did you notice that he didn't follow the path that he knew was the right path? And then he ended up having to take two steps back instead of going forward, you know, just instead of it being always about lecturing directly to your child or about your child, you can just find stories. Stories are healing.
They definitely are. And sometimes a character might remind one of your children of someone they know, of one of their friends in school. And all of a sudden you learn something about one of their friends.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes.
And well, I'm just saying there's so much of that.
You do. Yeah. So much so.
Two of our favorite subjects were entrepreneurship and financial intelligence, because I think the schools do a horrible job of talking about what is an entrepreneur, how do you become one, how do you handle money, and also personal development. I don't think, and you were in the schools a lot more, I always felt we needed to learn about everyone else, but never got a chance to learn about ourselves. So one of the books we read with our teens was a lot of personal development.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it probably gave you some insights into yourselves also.
Oh, absolutely. Books that I had read years ago and we read with them, I'm like, gosh, I don't remember reading that part, or I never got that out of that. But when you read it as a group, it is pretty remarkable how much more you actually digest.
So true.
That's definitely true. And the other thing you just brought up, which is really cool, and parents tell me this all the time, reading a child's book can be fun. I mean, it takes you back and you forget how good some of them are.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Holds you for sure.
How did you handle the education of the financial education and the entrepreneurship? Because you're right. Schools do basically nothing with that because they have no clue how to.
Yeah. One of our favorites was Richest Man in Babylon. When we've asked our older boys and some of their friends, they like The Richest Man in Babylon. That was kind of a classic for them. It was one that stuck out. We also played financial intelligence games, like almost like Monopoly type games that put them in real situations.
With real estate deals opportunities.
And even we have our own businesses. Once our teens got to a certain age, we started to really share things that I think a lot of families don't.
They attend our weekly accounting CFO meeting.
So they were in our accounting meeting.
That's phenomenal.
Hey, there were some times where we were stretched into a bunch of projects and that doesn't feel good, or things were really good. But we decided, how can we have our kids handle money if we never talk about it around them? So we're very open and we've made clear it's not a public forum they should be sharing, but we want them to understand how it actually works and see the practical affairs of it. So we actually involve them in things like that, real estate deals and accounting meetings.
So they can see the tough times and the good times.
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
It's my first business when I left teaching. I'm a serial entrepreneur, have been for a long time. My first business was called the School Report, National School Reporting Services. And we collected data on every single public school in the United States. And the original business model was to sell that data to real estate agents.
Oh, so,
because they're not allowed to tell you the schools are good or bad, but our reports could compare up to six schools and show it to you from a reliable source that they could give it out to parents. And we were running it to schools. And in those very early days, I would be out selling to all the real estate agents. My wife would be sitting home printing the school reports, and my kids would be doing the envelopes and licking the stick.
That's called teamwork. And I wanted to talk about that actually, Neil, because that really caught our eyes. What did you learn from that? Because obviously you're in the schools for 12 years. You said it's time to leave because you wanted to teach in other ways and grow in other ways. But what did you learn from that National School Reporting Services? I mean, so you saw data on schools all over the country. Uh-huh. So are there any ahas you had that were encouraging? I'm sure there was some that was discouraging. What did you uncover?
There were a couple that were really big on the entrepreneur side, and there were others that were big on the school side. One of the things on the school side that I found so interesting was I was surprised by how parents, different things, really different things were important to parents. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some parents, all they cared about were the scores, how the kids do at school, what were the SATs, what were the scores they were going to get on their tests, did the school score high enough? They were worried only about that.
Interesting.
Other parents were worried only about sports. What teams did the school have and what were the school records? And I talked to those parents and they said, well, if my kid wants to go to college, the only way he's going is on a scholarship. And kids who come from schools with good, solid sports programs get more scholarships. So that's what's important to me. Other parents, it was all about languages. And then there was a bunch of parents who wanted to make sure that there were computers in the school and that they were using the latest technology and stuff like that. So I found it very interesting that going into it, you would have thought if you give people the test scores, they're going to be happy. That's all they care about. But it wasn't true at all. A lot of people were driven in a very different direction.
That's interesting.
And then from an entrepreneurial perspective, what was interesting was going into real estate offices and making sales pitches and selling them one at a time across the country was a massively crazy thing to do. And in 1995 or 96, I switched it around and took all of the information and put it on the internet. I was one of the first internet lead gen programs. Wow. And I gave all the information away to parents for free in return for them telling me when they were moving, where they were moving, that type of stuff. And I sold all that information to moving companies, mortgage companies, insurance companies, real estate companies. So in 1996, I was generating 60,000 leads a month on the internet at the earliest time. And it was phenomenal. And then sold the data to Yahoo Schools and then eventually to a company out in Arizona. But part of being an entrepreneur is being able to shift. When I didn't shift, I had big problems. When I shifted, you got to learn from what you see. And you guys sound like you're incredibly open. And that's really one of the biggest keys because a lot of people try to hide or not think about certain parts of the business that might be holding them back and insist that their original idea was going to be the best thing and work forever and not just sit there and say, man, this isn't working, you know? So kudos. I mean, I think that's an incredibly strong trait to have.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, I want to revisit something real quickly because I have a question for the three of us. What would have been your, like if some parents are interested only in the sports score and some parents are in the testing scores, what would your top thing be? What would you be looking for?
Oh, hands down, entrepreneurship.
But like, how do you measure entrepreneurship on a thing?
What entrepreneurship, unless things have changed dramatically, because I sold this business decade ago or a little more, entrepreneurship is not taught in the schools.
No.
It's really so not. A little bit in high school, but I'd say 90% of schools in this country teach no entrepreneurship at all.
Hey there, friends. Let's talk about what really matters in life. Money, freedom, and family. You know, the things that keep us going, but occasionally drive us crazy as well. Now, imagine if you could have all three at once. Crazy, right? To think that? But it's possible with mine and Jamie's Passive Income Playbook. It's the perfect blueprint for creating a build-to-rent passive income-generating real estate portfolio that gives you and your family the freedom and passive income that you deserve. Now, I'm not just talking about some small change here. We're talking about real tangible income that will allow you to never miss that family event, that ball game, or the vacation ever again. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, but investing in real estate is so hard and time consuming. But fear not, my friend. The Passive Income Playbook makes it easy and very straightforward, step by step. So why not visit jjplaybook.com today and schedule a conversation with one of our sales counselors and download your own copy. Trust me, it'll be the best investment you make this year. Besides, maybe you get that feeling that you're going to buy back your time and also create a legendary family life. Because let's be honest, what's better than financial freedom and quality family time. Not much, except maybe that peace of mind that comes when you know you'll never have to choose between work and family again. So go ahead, make the investment and prioritize what truly matters in life. Your family will thank you. One more time, go ahead and visit jjplaybook.com.
Yeah, and we've seen that. There's a few that have started to. I actually, and it's pretty ceremonial and emotional at this point because he just died a few weeks ago. I had a teacher my senior year of high school. I was definitely not a good student and not even a great kid. But I had this one class called Business Organization and Management. George Malanga, he used to listen to our show. He just passed away a few weeks ago. We stayed in touch for years. He taught a class and there was this old giant textbook on business. I mean, this thing was predated possibly World War II. I mean, it was just an old business book. He threw it to the side and he said, okay, here's what we're going to do. And he bought everyone a copy of Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And we went through the book like you were talking about. We read together, slowly discussed it. It took almost half the year. Second half of the year, he said, well, we want to learn business, so you're going to build a business. And collectively, this small class of about 12 kids, we put together a t-shirt company, Calvin and Hobbes. Now I understand there's these copyright infringements where we shouldn't have been using the picture of Calvin and Hobbes. But forget the week before, like my last week of school, I received a check for like $800 from this small business we had put together and run as a test for all of us. And that was a lot of money back in 1992. And so that method of teaching has always stuck with me. And that's kind of the benchmark that I look for, which might not exist out there, but that's what made the difference for me.
Let me ask you a question, because I think about something similar. Just want your thoughts on it. When I grew up, obviously, the only thing that mattered was going to college. I mean, that's what it was. What percentage of your kids go to college? There are so many other paths you can take today and so many other paths you should take today. How important is it, do you think, for kids to go to college, would you say?
Unless you're a doctor.
I say I'm a 50-50 saying if they want to be a veterinarian, if they want to be an engineer, they want to be a physical therapist, those clear paths. For entrepreneurship, like we're talking about, I think it can actually be a hindrance. I think
it teaches you bad habits if you're not really in a solid routine of adulting, if you're in college, you know, unless you're really into what you're learning. It's
especially going to college for the sake of going to college,
which is we see a lot of people.
Yeah, that old liberal arts thing where you go to college to find out what you want to do. Well, that never happened.
Well, where were you born, Neil? The Northeast? Because you have the.
Yes, Long Island.
Yeah, so I'm a North Jersey boy, and where I came from, and you probably remember this, if you weren't going to college, you have just cut your life success in half at least. Like, there was successful. I mean, y'all, you just canceled half your life or the potential for success. And even if you wanted to go to a community college, you were still remedial. Mm-hmm. There was such a stigma around this. And now that I've looked back, there are so many people I know that were super successful that never went to college. And almost the people that some of them that went have done well, of course, and gone on for bigger, but it's not a guarantee. But it was very weird back then. If you remember, it was kind of a sentence to a remedial life if you didn't go.
It was 100% that. That's what I was talking about before, about people not changing when things need to be changed. It is so clear today that going to college is only right for certain people. If you're going to become a doctor or a lawyer, you know, that kind of thing, maybe you have to go. But for the others, there's so many better paths, including the paths of just going down family businesses and things like that. It's not always about technology and stuff like that. I mean, people in the trades today make a huge living and no reason to go to college at all. It's a matter of fact that they're 4 years behind everybody else if they do go.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Our oldest son is a captain fisherman. Captain on a fishing boat, his own fishing boat. And he got his license when he was 18 years old because he could. And so he gets to enjoy his life. He gets to make exponentially more money than any of his friends do in college by far. So it's just a nice, he's loving what he does.
Do you think it in any way hinders their ability to make and grow good friendships because so many of their friends do go to college?
No. What's beautiful is the types of friendships they have. We are seeing them have mentorships with older men that are guiding them that they have met along the way, which they wouldn't have met in college unless they really connected with a professor. And then we're watching them also mentor younger people, bringing younger people into their business or teaching them. And so it's been really neat. I mean, this is what I'm seeing.
It's neat to see
them a broader view of what friendship looks like, because they're true adults if they're functioning like this.
Yeah. I mean, Jim, you talked about that teacher you had, right? Yeah. That inspired you. And I'll bet if you think about it, that teacher inspired you not only to start your own businesses and become an entrepreneur, but to mentor people and to mentor young entrepreneurs. I'll bet that was just as important.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. He was very different. He took a different approach. And like I joked, I was voted class clown. So that means either a few of the teachers liked me and the others wanted my early demise. They couldn't say it, but, you know, so, and he was the one who said, "Oh, you got a good sense of humor. Oh, you're just spirited." And it was just a different approach and it worked. It worked. I think that's a hard thing to be able to navigate. I know that's what you talk about. How do parents navigate difficult kids like me that aren't that straight? I'm going to get straight A's and I'm going to become an engineer. I don't know if you had any experience with that with your own kids, but some of us are more difficult to navigate than others.
Yeah, no, it is difficult. It really gets back to parenting, to what the role of a parent is. You know, is the role of a parent to tell a child what to do, or is the role of a parent to guide and mentor? Is the role of a parent to tell a kid what books to read or read the books with them? All of those types of things. And parents who are able to develop close relationships with their children, ongoing close relationships, and aren't always the boss. One of the things I tell parents all the time is outdoor education is really incredibly important, because in the house, you're the boss. Outside, things are much more equalized.
I like that.
And you can develop a different type of relationship. So get out, even if you just go for a walk for 15 minutes with your kid, you'll be amazed at what that kind of stuff does. And then you become supportive because you start to trust your kid. You start to realize your child's potential. And when your child says, "I don't think I want to go to college, I want to do this," instead of saying, "No, that's stupid, you're going to college," because all kids go to college, you're saying to them, "Let's talk about it and let me hear what you have in mind." And that's the difference. It really is.
Knowing your work now, Neil, how do you handle that? Like for us, it'd be an easy conversation. You'd be like, "Hey, Neil, guess what? Our son doesn't want to go to college. We're so excited for him." But I'm sure you have.
What we're doing instead. We made a plan.
But I'm sure you've had to coach and mentor parents through that. They have that. Mm-hmm. How do you approach that parent? Because I'm sure there's some.
Because we've had a lot of people who come to us and say,
and they think,
"I think I'm going to let him not go to school." I'm like, "Let him not go to school. Like, make his
own." Or they're like, or they're completely depressed. They're like ashamed and depressed.
Yeah, exactly.
Going back to the stigma that you and I grew up with. How do you coach those parents? Because that's a big thing that's still happening.
You try to get them involved in what they're going to do, not what they're not going to do.
Good point.
So instead of making a decision of do you or do you not go to college, the decision should be, let's talk about what you want to do when you graduate high school.
Yeah, that's great.
What do you want to do?
Yeah.
What do you want? Not what do you not want?
Right. No. So if your kid says to you, "Great, I don't think I want to go to college," that's telling me what you don't want to do. Tell me what you do want to do.
That's great. Talking about clarity, that's a great
And if you have that conversation, your child may very well convince you that he has a plan or she has a plan that to go forward with, that they've actually really thought about this. And there's also, by the way, what I used to think, and I hear where you're going, and I've gotten pretty close to where you are, but I used to say the best thing for kids to do is take a year off after high school to figure out what they want to do.
I love it.
If they want to go to college, if they don't want to go to college, go out, get a job for a year and do that. Don't go travel. Just go get a job. And you're not going to lose anything by that.
No.
And there's so much to gain.
Yeah. Our second oldest, I think, he was maybe 15 or 16. And he was watching his older brother, knowing that his older brother has wanted to be a fisherman since he was like 12. I mean, it's what he's wanted to do. And he's been super focused and he's gotten there. He was 15, the next one. And he's like, there was a place he could get a job at. All he cared about was a paycheck. So he worked as many hours and as long of hours, everything that he could do at this restaurant. And he thought it was the best thing ever. And we were like, "Oh my gosh, like he's getting, the money is so nice when you're 15 years old, 15, 16. And you think, oh, this is it. This is great. I'm going to work in a restaurant for the rest of my life." And we're kind of white knuckling it like, "Oh, when's he going to figure out he doesn't want to work at a restaurant?" And then it happened all of a sudden. He was like, "I am done with this crap. I don't want to be this forever. And it was just so interesting because you have to let them do those things. I mean, everybody should have to work service industry, honestly. That's what we always. Both. But it was an interesting moment as a parent because he stayed in that job a little longer than was comfortable for us because we knew what he was around and we knew. But he hit that wall one day and literally he like quit the very next day. And I thought, oh, that was fast. Okay, he's done. And it's just interesting.
Yeah. You learn from what you do. I have good friends who actually live in Florida. They live up in the Fort Lauderdale area on the other side. And their children, they grew up in Florida. Their children grew up in Florida. Very bright kids. And this kid just wanted to be a fireman. That's what he wanted to be. He was a fireman. This kid could have been a doctor. He could have wanted to be a fireman. And they sort of did whatever and let him try it out and everything. And he became a fireman. And 25 years later, he was retired. And he had a huge pension. And he's doing another job. He's just as happy as anybody could ever be. And he worked 3 days a week and had 4 days off. And he travels a lot. So it's a funny thing. You'll like this. His father is a good friend of mine. His favorite saying, which came from his father, is you can't put your head on somebody else's shoulders.
Mm. Oh, it makes so much sense. Too many parents try to do that, right?
Exactly. Exactly. But get into your kid's head and find out what they want and where they're going and what they want to do. If you can do that, you're going to succeed and your children are going to succeed.
Yeah. And it's good for you to say that type of scenario, Neil, because obviously I don't know your friends and you don't know my friends, but I have friends of the exact scenario that you just said. They were firemen. They wanted to be firemen. They retired in 25 years. Along the way, they bought a few rental properties. They are loving life, ingrained in their community, have great family lives. People are like, well, you could never be wealthy at that. They're pretty dang wealthy now from the smart.
Pretty wealthy.
Along the way. Yeah. And so it shows, give them the space. Because what I always say, Neil, is our saying is, if you choose the path for your children, be prepared to carry it.
Well, that's the whole head on the shoulders thing.
Like, that's a great line. And that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
So I mean, to me, the saddest thing, and I've seen it all my life, is people who have really good jobs. And from the time they're 25 or 30, all they ever talk about is, I can't wait till I retire.
Mm.
And to me, there's nothing sadder than that.
Mm-hmm. No.
I mean, they're making money, they're doing whatever, but they hate every minute of their jobs. And they'd be so much happier if they were a hell of a lot poorer and doing something they loved.
Yeah. What advice did you give to your kids, Neil, when trying to not pick their path, guide their path, or just ask, like you always ask great questions. Were there any questions you asked your kids to help them kind of
shape
or go in the direction they might like?
Yeah. I mean, it was the same thing. I mean, we always talk to our kids about futures, about opportunities, about things they can do, about being aware of what other people did, even their friends, what your friends' parents do. Be aware of their, try to learn as much as you can about all different kinds of jobs out there. And our oldest didn't listen at all. Our middle child is an entrepreneur. He writes music for commercials and for video games and things like that. And he's doing just great. And our younger became an entrepreneur, but she did it the old-fashioned way. She went to Boston University. She went to the School of Business Management and came out and went to work for Citibank and then became an entrepreneur a few years later. And she actually became my CFO for my company, for a school board company for a number of years. Then got married and started having kids. But now she teaches a form of Pilates, I think, called the Reformer or something. And she's in the best shape of any human being you've ever met in your life. I've never seen, I'm scared of her. No, she's in great shape. But they're all different. And children, the same thing. You have your children. Just get to know them. I mean, for everybody. Because they're all going to be different. What you do for kid A is not going to work for the second kid.
No.
Definitely.
Certainly won't work for the third kid, right?
No, no guarantee on that. That's a terrible recipe of one size fits all. We've learned that. Don't even try. Yeah,
just be open. Just don't shut doors. Just be open to possibilities.
Yeah.
Now, Neil, tell us about your book for adults.
So the book for adults is called Rediscover the Village, Classic Strategies to Help Children Develop a Lifelong Love of Learning. Mm. And the book was written 60 years ago when I was teaching, and it was written with another teacher. And we worked with families to do this. There are 50 strategies in the book. And there are two main concepts. One concept is having a home learning environment, the kind of stuff we're talking about. Even little things like just having private space where they can do their work, but also a lot of different things parents can do with kids when you're riding in the car for 15 minutes, when you're going for a walk, when you're doing different things, how to show kids how well they're doing, little things like that. And the second thing, which we've really lost, that I think is sad, is the homeschool partnership. That really existed years ago. Now homeschool has become like a war. It has become parents against teachers and parents against schools, and they don't work together anymore. So there's a lot of strategies to help parents develop a closer relationship with their children's school, which at the end of the day gets their kids more attention, does a lot of really good things. Even simple thing like writing a thank you note to a teacher when your kid comes home happy about something that happened in school today. Simple strategies, but it's really true. I mean, the schools now, it's really sad where they become, you know, and the whole thing, it comes back to what I said at the beginning, because it's something I've really thought about a lot, that books are not babysitters. One of the worst things about the world today, as compared to the world I grew up in, is kids spend almost their entire day with babysitters. They don't go out and play on their own in the afternoon. Everything is organized sports. Everything is with a coach. Everything is with a teacher. Everything is with somebody. And they don't have any time to just be themselves. And schools have been turned into babysitters. You see, if teachers go on strike, the parents are all freaked out. Why? Because it's interfering with their ability to go to work and do their things. They don't have their babysitter. And getting schools back to being in partnership with parents, so the kind of discussions we're having, you can have with your child's teachers about entrepreneurship, about everything, and have that have an effect and have the teachers work with you, that used to exist. So that's what the book is about.
Well, that's interesting.
And the one other thing I'm doing, which I'd like to mention again, not tout it, but to say I'm also coming out with a new series of books called Can You Read Nature? Mm-hmm. And you know how to read a book, but do you know how to read nature? So one of the books is, can you read the daytime sky? One is, can you read a flower garden? Can you read a pond? And there's also the national parks. Can you read Arches National Park? And they're all written in verse, and they're all for younger kids. But it gives the parents a way for 15, 20 minutes. They're short 30-page books to get outside. And can you read the daytime sky? Do you know that when you see a lot of birds, it's going to be nice? If the birds aren't around, there's probably bad weather coming. I mean, can you read things? So that's really a and get people outside without their devices.
No, you're so right. It's such a skill. This morning we were laying in bed and I was like, wow, it must be really nice. I'm like, the birds are so happy. And he was like, do you hear birds? And I'm like, I've been hearing them all morning. And you're like, wow. But it's something that, like, it's just like anything, how you can walk across the street, you can read the waves. Like, you know, is it coming up? Is it whatever? It's such a skill that you have to learn.
There was actually a meme that was sent to me. I don't even share it with you yet. It said, I want my kids to be able to identify plants and signs of nature instead of celebrities and top fashions. Mm. I was like, wow.
And that's exactly what these books do. And the books finish, by the way, which is sort of interesting. The books finish with jobs you could have. So you could be a weather person. You could be this. There's so many different things. So many different jobs available in nature and careers in nature that you could have. Talks about park rangers and, you know, stuff like that. So getting kids outside, going for a walk with your kid, just one-on-one. I mean, that's not done very much anymore.
No. Yeah. No, you're speaking our language, Neil. You are speaking our language. Where can people find the books? Because I know after listening to this interview, someone's going to want to look up some Professor Stork stuff. So,
well, my website is professorstork.com.
Okay. Nice. Perfect.
And so they can go there. They can also do profstork.com. There are all the books available there. They can sign up for the family book club, which is absolutely free. And I really encourage people to do that, because the people who have done it, a lot of people want to do what you've done with the family book club, but they actually don't know how to start. The first step is always the hardest step. And so this says, here's a book. You read it. Let your kid read it. Have a book club meeting. And here are three questions that you can ask the kid. Start creating conversation openers.
So
perfect. Good. Well, Neil, this was a great conversation. Yeah, we appreciate this. We'll have to have more discussions, especially as more books come out. I love the sound of that next set of books. That's definitely right up our family's alley.
That's great. I will let you know when that comes out. And I really appreciate the time. And I love what you guys are doing. I mean, you're really helping people in a lot of ways. And we have a lot of the same beliefs. So that's terrific.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again, Neil.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.